Hey, thanks for dropping in.
This is Talking Tones Podcast, a show for sound and audio enthusiasts, which looks at real-life applications and occurrences of sound. If you've ever had a conversation, been outside, or heard a sound, then this podcast is for you. I'm your host, Liam.
And so am I, Jay. And we're audio production master students at the University of Salford. If you want to read more about any of the subjects we talk about, you can find our accompanying blogs in the description, so pay those a visit if you desire. Liam's are a bit more fun, and mine are a bit wordier, so take your pick.
In this episode, Philophiles, we investigate one of the most common elements of speech and communication. Something we all use, maybe more than we're even aware of. Something that crops up in every language, and seems to happen almost subconsciously.
We're talking about filler sounds, the ums, ums, and ers which we scatter throughout our speech. Let's dive into the research behind what these sounds really are, where they come from, and if they're even meant to be there at all.
And now, a message from our sponsors.
This podcast is brought to you by...
absolutely no one at the moment. So if you're desperate to sponsor a budding podcast prodigy pairing, then feel free to slide into our DMs and we'll take it from there.
One erm, two erm, three, you see. Each hesitation sets you free.
So Jay, what actually is a filler sound?
So a filler sound is essentially a noise that we make between words when we're talking. There's no written equivalent, so although it's language-based, we're really just looking at sounds here. You've got syntactic fillers, which are short phrases.
To be honest,
you know, yeah, of course, I think...
you've got morphological fillers, which are just words.
So...
actually...
okay, like...
basically.
Literally.
Yeah.
And then you've got phonemic fillers, which are just sounds.
Wait, sorry. Phonemic.
Phonemic.
Phonemic. How do you spell phonemic?
That's P-H-O-N-E-M-I-C.
I saw you look.
Well,
right, stop erming and get on with it. So that's what we're going to look at today.
Yeah, and the best part is we all use them. Maybe more than we think. So these filler sounds crop up absolutely everywhere. They exist in every language and we all use them without even thinking about it.
But why that specific sound?
Well, it's a vowel-based sound, which we see pretty consistently across most languages.
I guess it's a super easy sound to make.
Yeah, it's basically just the sound of air passing over your vocal cords.
Of course it is.
I was reading a book on sound design by David Sonnenschein for my post-production project, and he talks about how human vocal structures are actually very similar to wind instruments. The way our vocal cords vibrate resonates to create certain formants, and they allow us to recognise vowel sounds even at different pitches. So these formants not only allow us to hear vowel sounds, but also to interpret emotional states and identify different speakers.
Turns out vowels are super important.
Yeah. He also mentions that vowels are probably the first sounds to be developed by humans, since they're pretty similar to the calls of animals. These tend to be in the mid-frequency range, which is perfect for travelling over longer distances in the wild, so that's pretty important for communication between animals. Obviously, we've since had to develop consonants as a way of separating these sounds and developing a more complex language.
Clearly not so complex that we don't still rely on these vowel-based grunts to get our words out properly.
Well, there is a theory that early human language, or proto-language, would have been mostly onomatopoeic, so we would have basically attempted to imitate the sounds that we heard around us, and that would have been a really early form of verbal communication.
So if these sounds are that ingrained into our speech and language, it's no surprise that they crop up as often as they do. So Jay, why do we use them?
Well, Liam, I don't want to give too many spoilers because we are going to jump into this in a bit more detail later on, so stick around to find out why we really use them. But more often than not, the filler sound seems to serve as a sort of thinking sound. We use them when our mouths are moving quicker than our brains and we need a second to catch up. But let's hold this thought for a moment and we'll revisit it later with a bit more research to back it up.
Just before we move on to the next section, if you're hypervigilant, see if you can count the number of times we say in this episode and leave your answers in the comments.
We'll count them too, so make sure you join us in the next episode to see if you were right.
One erm, two erm, three, you see. Each hesitation sets you free.
Okay, so we thought a bit about where these sounds come from. Let's talk about how people feel about them. How do you feel about them, Jay? I've noticed we tend to associate filler sounds with a lack of confidence. If we think about places where people deliver powerful speeches like TED Talks or even things like sales pitches, you don't tend to hear many filler sounds or words. But then again, these are generally pretty rehearsed.
Yeah, I mean, that actually reminds me of something I saw on Reddit. I was reading a thread on filler sounds, and a guy on there mentioned something called extemporaneous speaking events. And
sorry, that's a... say that again.
Which bit? Extemporaneous?
Extemporaneous. Carry on.
So it's a real thing. It's an event where you have to deliver a speech that's completely unscripted, completely unrehearsed, but you literally get judged and graded on your ability to speak without using fillers. So yeah, this guy on Reddit said that's a real event called extemporaneous speaking. I competed on it in my high school debate team.
At this point, you are making things up.
No,
Jay.
This is real.
Okay, whatever.
I've also found, you know, you generally see online websites and dictionaries referring to filler sounds as vocal disfluencies, which makes sense, but it does intrinsically carry some negative connotations.
Why have you been reading dictionaries?
For research.
All right. Carry on.
There's also a book. I am allowed to read those, right?
Just this one.
Excellent. There's a book called How We Talk by N.J. Enfield, and there's even a bit on the blurb that says,
"We all had teachers who scolded us over the use of like, and mm-hmm."
You know, there's actually AI sites that remove filler words and sounds from recorded speech.
Oh.
Yeah. So there's one called Descript. I've used it a few times. Their tagline is, "Annihilate filler words. Purge your recordings of ums, ers, you knows, and a dozen other filler words with a click."
Annihilate.
Yeah, annihilate.
Well, filler sounds are clearly something that people don't want to hear.
I think that's true.
Yeah, I think it's especially true in, you know, in the corporate and professional scene. When I was researching filler sounds, I kept running into articles called things like, "What are filler words? Examples and tips to avoid them," and "Are you guilty of using filler words?" And, you know, interestingly, these are all from sites like Indeed and LinkedIn, so I think it's really apparent that using these kinds of sounds is considered unprofessional and undesirable.
Yeah, well, as I worked as a freelancer for the past 5 years, if I go in and I'm trying to get a new job and everything like that, the more erms I use, the more I seem like I have absolutely no clue about what I'm talking about, and the less likely I am to get the job. At least that's what I've always been told by the people that are employing me.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you read through some of these articles, the filler sounds are frequently referred to as, you know, meaningless, distracting. One site claimed that they can inhibit your ability to communicate clearly. I actually found there's courses that you can take to train yourself not to use them.
I know, it's ridiculous. Even for podcasts like this, we're supposed to edit them out afterwards.
Well, let's make a point of leaving some in this one.
I hope you guys are counting.
Okay, so we've established there's clearly a bit of a stigma around filler sounds. Seems as though they get pretty bad rep, especially in the professional world, but are they really all that bad?
We've been doing some deep investigation and uncovered some pretty groundbreaking information. So stick around and come back after the sponsor break.
There's no sponsor.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, just stick around to find out the truth about filler sounds.
One and two and three, you see. Each hesitation sets you free.
So it turns out filler sounds actually serve a very important purpose for communication and for delivering cues to listeners. There's some quite extensive research in this area, but there's a publication by Foxtree.
We'll link it in the description if you guys want to read it.
This suggests that the sound in particular has a beneficial effect on listeners' ability to recognise words in upcoming speech.
Okay, so filler sounds give the speaker time to think, but they also give the listener time to process what's being said.
I think we generally use them to kind of hold our turn in a conversation, you know, to indicate we're not done speaking yet, like a talking stick. If you think back to earlier when I was talking about TED Talks and other places where you don't hear that many filler sounds, they tend to be situations where the speaker doesn't need to worry about being interrupted. If they pause to think or for dramatic effect, which I like to do, nobody is going to butt in. Jay, you will butt in if I leave a small gap.
That is quite likely.
Go on, tell us about another book.
I will. It's the same book. So the book I was talking about earlier, How We Talk. The rest of the blurb goes on to suggest that those bad words are actually fundamental to language, and throughout the book, Enfield refers to filler sounds as traffic signals of speech. I think that kind of goes back to, you know, that thing about signalling to say that you're still speaking or still thinking. Your talking stick. They let your listener know that there's some new information coming and give them a second or so to, you know, to refocus and to subconsciously prepare for that.
These signals are completely universal. They show up in every language.
Yeah, did you know that sign language actually has a sign for when you're thinking of what to say next?
Oh yeah, tell me what it is. Fundamentally, it boils down to communication. There's obviously a time and place where they may be not so helpful, but it seems like filler sounds are pretty essential for normal and natural sounding speech. If we didn't use them, it would probably sound really scripted and unnatural.
Like AI. I mean, actually, jumping back on the AI thing, I've seen with a lot of AI voiceover software recently that there's now often an option to humanise the speech. And one of the ways that they're doing that is by adding in some of the ums and ums and filler sounds that AI-generated speech is generally lacking.
So literally the opposite to the filler removal AI I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think this goes to show how important filler sounds are for establishing a sense of fluency.
Well, it's the same for other languages too. So if you're learning a new language, one of the best ways to sound more fluent is to learn the filler sounds and words for that language and start peppering them into your speech. It also buys you a lot more time to think while still sounding like a native speaker.
Peppering?
Peppering. Can I just also add something to what we were saying earlier about TED Talks? I remember reading something a while ago about how filler sounds can actually affect the way we perceive a speaker in terms of their honesty and authenticity. So from what I remember, the research showed that people actually use fewer filler words when they're lying. So we kind of associate the ums and ums with a more genuine style of speaking.
Yeah, well, I think that makes sense in terms of TED Talks and sales pitches. They can sometimes have quite a clinical air to them. They're not particularly intimate, which I get because I don't think they're meant to be. But it is interesting to think about how the way they talk gives us a certain impression. Like they might sound more intelligent or authoritative, but they don't necessarily sound super authentic or genuine. Something to think about.
Seems like filler sounds are really doing a lot of work for us.
It really does.
One arm, two arm, three, you see. Each hesitation sets you free.
Thank you for joining us today. We've looked at what filler sounds are and where they might have come from, and we've heard some pretty compelling arguments, both for and against them. What do you reckon, Jay?
Is that you giving me the talking stick?
You can have the talking stick. For now.
I'm definitely team filler sound, at least based on what we've talked about today.
Me too.
Let us know in the comments how you guys feel about them.
That's all we have time for today. But if you've got more to add, feel free to start a discussion in the comments or head over to our blogs for a more in-depth exploration and to access some of the sources we've talked about today.
Feel free to leave us some feedback too. We're podcast babies, so we've got a lot to learn.
Share this podcast with someone who ums and erms a lot. And if you work out in ours, let us know how many you got.
Thanks again and see you next time.
Bye! Bye.
More.